Golf Weekly
from Off the Ball.
Brought to you by the Off the Ball Open in Abu Dhabi this November. Book your place now at offtheball.com/open.
Oh, wow! In your life, have you seen anything like that?
I'm a very confident front runner for caddy for 33 years, 145 wins now, and that's the best win I've ever had.
I have no idea what you have.
I don't know. How are we going to count all the shots? I can't keep track.
Fuck! God damn it!
I don't think he's pleased.
Of course I would. That's a particularly stupid question. It's the Irish Open. Of course I want to play at the weekend.
Hello there. You're welcome along to Golf Weekly. We are slingshotting from Lahinch into Portrush. Remarkable times for golf on this island. Fionn Davenport in studio. Hello.
Hey, Joe.
A miracle.
Yeah. I say this every time I'm in studio, but it's a kind of a weird, and I only weird because I shouldn't be this happy about it, but I really am.
Nothing else going on in my life.
It kind of says as much as that when it's the highlight of my week.
Month.
Let's go. What, 2019? Yeah. It is to come in and sit down and see everyone, and it's nice.
No Nathan Murphy, he's caught up with Off the Ball business today, and Peter Lawrie also busy this afternoon. So it's just us two as we leave Lahinch and look ahead to Portrush. There's a lot going on. We'll start with some tweets. Stuart Armstrong was down in Lahinch. He said, McGinley on Golf Weekly has been talking about this for months. He had a picture of everybody in the streets having a few drinks, and I'm glad he's pulled it off. A Phoenix Open where the drinking is done off the course. Martin Scarry went down and we're off. Dubai Duty Free Irish Open, looking forward to a great day. Had a picture of him in his car heading down. A lot of people really tweeting to say they had a great time at Lahinch. And then a huge reaction as well to our Powers Court show.
Oh, yeah.
Connor sketches more and Eamon Darcy.
I hear, but like the Jack Nicklaus story.
Yeah.
I mean, come on. That's fantastic stuff. First of all, that's funny. It was funny. Mm. The whole, the greatest player of all time. And if you don't believe, he'll tell you himself.
Yeah.
But the fact that then Jack Nicklaus tweets Connor to go, no, I was laughing on the inside. It was like, oh my God.
Yeah. No, Jack Nicklaus, in some small way, has now seen Golf Weekly.
Yes. Or someone in the Jack Nicklaus stable.
Yeah. Nathan then sent a screen grab to say, holy shit.
It's unbelievable.
Jack Nicklaus just retweeted our show. Yeah, if you missed that, Jack Nicklaus, just go through Jack Nicklaus's Twitter feed.
You'll find it there.
You'll find us there. Sean Clancy, really great chat with the understated Eamon Darcy. He was good, as is the case with that generation, not PR trained to within an inch of their lives. Yeah. Not afraid to dish the dirt on some people. Sam Snead took a kick in.
I know. But because I was so... I mention him on the pod occasionally, but my friend Paul Ferreter, the golf sculptor, so he had listened to the pod and he commented on that. He goes, geez, you know, there was some great dirt dished on Sam Snead. And it was, so it dawned on me, and obviously we kind of have this, we mythologize the greats of golf, and you know, your Walter Hagens, your Sam Sneads, your Gene Sarazens, whatever. But when you consider that until... at the earliest, the late 50s and probably the very early 60s, with the establishment of the Big Three, the golf professional was like kind of a dirty stopout that was intruding on the great noble amateur game and members of clubs, etc. So I would imagine that all these kind of hard-bitten pros were tough, tough men, and so would have been party to... So, not, I don't mean behaviour, but that certainly, you know, their personalities, they wouldn't have been the friendliest people in the world necessarily, or the nicest people in the world. That, you know, they'd kind of come up hard and were probably saw the world in a very kind of, in stark and harsh view. So it makes perfect sense that a Sam Snead would be a bit of a bastard. Like, okay, you and I, obviously, we never met him. But can you imagine that Ben Hogan was a particularly charming man?
Quiet man.
I'd say as tough as nails and probably quite intolerant, quite difficult, but, you know, yeah, quiet and not necessarily, you know, he's not Phil Mickelson. You know, he's not like, hey, everybody, how you doing? Anyway, but I thought it was very interesting. So when Paul said that to me, I went back and I listened, and you're absolutely right. to have an Eamon Darcy is such a brilliant thing because they're not PR polished. Mm. So they have that, they're not afraid to say something that might necessarily cause a little bit of backbite.
Mm. John Campbell on the Paris Court pod said, great listen, hilarious from Connor's sketches. Eamon Darcy, very good as well. Adrian Kelly, lads, your best pod yet. Very funny, great stories. Connor might have picked up on this. Did you notice how Eamon Darcy sounded exactly like Stephen Roach? I didn't notice that. Maybe a touch, mm. a touch there.
Minus the French accent.
Yeah. Sean Flynn, haven't laughed as much in a long time. Donal O'Hagan, enjoyed the Paris Court pod despite the disappointment of not getting the invitation to play. Sorry, Donal. It really should be called the Pomp Pod, considering how many times in his pomp was used. Was that a phrase that was used? I didn't notice.
In his pomp.
In his pomp.
That's pretty good.
Ian Kane, what a picture. Listening to the pod here in Cancun. He's having a good time. That picture, yikes. We retweeted it. Ronan O'Brien, great day at the Paris Court Day, lads. Really enjoyed playing with Adrian Bain, Mo Perdue and Anto Hughes, along with some good pudding advice and laughs from Connor Sketches. Connor Sketches ending up on national television as a pudding guru is one of the many more surreal days in his life. Kid presentable, cracking day at Paris Court, courtesy of Golf Weekly. We even managed to win first prize. There you go.
Nice. Connor is he's a tidy enough golfer, isn't he?
He's off 17 or 18.
Oh, is he?
Yeah.
His swing suggests lower.
He's keenly aware of that, as in he puts up the top of his backswing and it looks brilliant. Mm. And then he faces the embarrassment of actually having to play in front of people.
Oh, right.
He's lucky in that a still picture of his swing.
Looks like he's a single finger handicapper.
And even his swing looks really good. Mm. So, no, he's 17, 18, but I suspect he's going to improve very quickly and play lots of nice courses over the next while.
With, can you imagine the access that he had? That's the other thing I was thinking about. Is like this meteoric rise from being, you know, just an ordinary, humble guy trying to make his way in the world, and all of a sudden
selling phones.
Yeah, and all of a sudden, he's like Jack Nicklaus knows on first name terms with like the very, very greats of golf.
It's unbelievable.
It's phenomenal.
Yeah, it's amazing. His head has not spun more, because I hung out with him a little bit, not much in Lahinch. He's just a great fella.
Where does he live?
He was in New York for the previous 6-7 months,
okay,
and came home for his own sanity, he was saying.
Right.
Like, just, I'm having too good a time. I need to come back for a while.
I know how you feel, Connor.
You know, in this nation of begrudgers.
Yep.
It's not true. Being around him for the while I was, we went out on Wednesday night. The amount of people that just come over to him and say, oh, sorry to stop you, I just want to say, it's unbelievable what you're doing. You're doing so well. And over in America, geez, fair play to you. But you're really funny.
Because he's funny.
Fair play to you. But there's no sense of, there's your man, thinks he's funny.
But he is funny. It's not even, like, it's a bit like, okay, so we're recording this on Thursday, and for Irish listeners, you all know that Brendan Grace has died.
Mm.
So Brendan Grace, and for non-Irish people, Dublin comedian, but who made his way, like, obviously did very, very well here, but then moved to Florida. Like, would you imagine that anyone ever begrudged Brendan Grace the fact that Frank Sinatra thought he was hilarious, or that Sammy Davis Jr. thought he was the funniest person he'd ever met?
I didn't know that.
Yes. Sammy Davis Jr. loved Brendan Grace, thought he was the funniest man he knew, so he introduced him to Frank Sinatra, and then Frank Sinatra was like, yeah, I'll have a piece of that. And
nice.
Yeah. So
really?
Yeah. He knew Frank Sinatra.
Wow.
But my point is this, is that when you're funny, you get away with everything.
Mm. I think there's begrudgery over Brendan O'Carroll and Mrs. Brown's Boys.
Because it's so divisive.
I think
that's what I mean. It's Connor's funny. I know. Do you know what? I've heard enough good stories of Brendan O'Carroll to know that he's a really decent guy.
Yeah, but there's still begrudgery.
Yeah, because Mrs. Brown's Boys is considered shite by a lot of people.
Yeah.
Now, I actually personally have huge admiration for Brendan O'Carroll. Huge.
Yeah.
For what he's gone through in his life and the way he's come back. And the fact is like, when no one else kind of thought that he had a nickel to rub together, that he managed to turn this into like this massive success. It's phenomenal.
Yeah.
Even though I don't think it's particularly good.
No, it's not my cup of tea.
No. But maybe it's because Mrs. Brown's Boys is on television all the time, and maybe we see it, an Ireland reflected back at us that we don't particularly like in it.
Mm. Maybe. Well, anyway. Conor Moore's experience of Irish people at the moment seems to be them apologetically coming up and saying, I'm so sorry to bother you. I just want to say you're brilliant and fair play to you. They're not coming up going, do your Jose Mourinho. They're coming up to say,
Really?
No, they're not doing
oh,
that.
Oh, so they're not?
No,
oh,
no, there's none of this. Come up and do an impression. Here, do your Rory McIlroy. It's coming up to say, God, fair play to you. It's going so well.
Now, again, to put the cat amongst the proverbial pigeons, he's the funniest sketch artist I've heard in this country. Like, first of all, his impressions are nailed on.
I'm not getting into comparing or not, but, like, I think Mario Rosenstock's a genius.
So do
as well.
I. Because
probably
Mario...
brilliant.
Now, Mario, like, Mario does great voices, but, like, it's what Connor and Mario have in common. It's the scripting.
Totally. I said that to him in the interview.
It's the scripting.
You're
it's,
not just a brilliant mimic. You're, like, it's funny.
Yeah.
Your Nicholas line about him, he'll tell you. It's funny. It's well observed. It's good.
Yeah.
Hey, this has turned into a tribute show.
Go on.
But lots of love for him on the Twitter machine. Anthony Coscorin, great day out. Course in fantastic condition it was, and a very well organised event. Yeah, we had brilliant support from people here to put that all together. Me and the Golf Weekly team did not do much in the way of that. Thanks to everyone involved. John Woods was listening to the podcast while on honeymoon in Mexico, earphones in, heading from Holbox Island.
Yes.
Out to swim with whale sharks.
Okay, so Holbox is, if you're going to that part of the world, the Yucatan Peninsula, Holbox I think is the nicest part of the coast.
Is that right?
Yeah, it's gorgeous. Way better than Cancun, sorry.
Well, Cancun's just a spring break destination,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, it's full of kind of resorts, and whereas Holbox is just lovely.
Isn't it? Well, that's where he is on his honeymoon. He's heading out to swim with whale sharks. Whale sharks? What's a whale shark?
It's a big shark.
Is it a high...
I don't know.
It's a hybrid. Do they crossbreed?
I don't know.
To distract from the nerves. Well, this was on July 1st, and I haven't heard from John Wood since, so... Brian Hegarty, I was lucky enough to be at the Irish Open last Thursday. Gents, and I agree with your sunburn stories. Oh, my God. But what a venue. No traffic. Park and ride perfect into the village. Superbly organised. It has to return there. Only complaint was it was treacherous underfoot. I think Sky said there were two broken ankles on the Friday.
Really?
It can happen.
Did it rain
type of terrain.
On Thursday night?
It was just that type of terrain.
Right.
You need to be paying attention.
I didn't get a chance to go, but I watched all of it on television.
That is where we're going to turn to next. So, John Rahm, winner of the Dubai Duty Free Irish Open, a final round 62. I was there, and Nathan was there, John Duggan down for News Talk as well. You were watching from afar on television. It was my sense on the pictures I saw on television that the atmosphere did come across.
It was. So, I'm at home in Manchester watching it on Sky, ignoring any kind of desire on my part for an Irish Open to be successful. You know, so you're kind of hoping for the best and trying to make the best of a bad situation. Oh, it doesn't look that bad. Ignoring all of that, just objectively speaking, it was amazing. It was by far the most attractive looking golf I've seen on TV. And I include everything except for the Masters, and probably Pebble, just cause. And I know it sounds like I'm exaggerating, but I'm really not. Even the crappy weather on the Saturday, it wasn't that great, was fine. Mm. So the two things, or three things. One, the quality of the golf was superb.
Yeah.
There were some great stories every day. So on the Thursday, it was Harrington 6-under, which was just savage to watch.
Yeah, it was great. I was electric there. There was this real sense all week that this was special. Wednesday was amazing. I was out until about 3:30, 4 Wednesday.
Which is like, what, 5 hours past your bedtime?
Thursday morning. Oh, my God, and the rest.
Yeah.
And so right from the off, it was great. Wednesday was a spectacular day. Harrington does his thing on Thursday, tweets the picture of having the ice cream cone on the way home, which was just so in keeping with the feel. And then right from that point, like, we're off. Robert Rock's 60. Like, that's electric. John Rahm 62 electric. So I agree. Pretty much every day. Was it... Saturday, Rock shot the 60.
Yeah.
Friday, I'm not sure what Friday was. But in some respects, Friday was the Harrington show ending obliteration. That was the story.
Yeah.
And then you had Robert Rock 60 and John.
That's exactly. So you had these wonderful storylines on every day that kept you really glued to the action. So that's number one. So the quality of the golf was superb. Number two was that when they kept kind of flashing images of Lahinch, the village itself, and everything that an international audience assumes about the best of Ireland was on display. So easygoing, relaxed, full of people, a festival atmosphere. And I realise when you say the words a festival atmosphere, it's just a cliche. But in this instance, it actually happened to be spot on true. Mm. And then the third thing, and I'm sure that Dubai Duty Free, Paul McGinley and the organisers made sure to correspond with Tourism Ireland or Falcha, because every so often they would crack away from the coverage and show you, you know, those little kind of inserts. And so they do the clips of Moher and just, so generally the West of Ireland. And it just made it all look so spectacular. Mm. And so the whole package together, if you're looking to sell golf in Ireland, you could not do a better job.
Yeah.
I must say, and so I was so immensely proud because, like, my wife loves Ireland. She's English, but loves Ireland. And even she was coming down occasionally to sit down with me to watch a bit of the golf, and she was like, God, and but at one point when they show a bit of the Burren, she was like, God, it looks so bleak out there. And I was like, no, that's part of its beauty. And she goes, no, I know, but there's no trees. Mm. And I was like, well, that's the nature of Clare. And,
yeah.
But just to see the landscape reflected on TV was just, oh, it was really something. And as someone who writes about tourism, obviously, an awful lot, I took my hat off to them all the organisers, yeah, everybody involved. It was just brilliant.
Well, golf generates €650 million in the Irish economy each year. 50% of all visitors are Americans,
yeah,
who come and play here. On average, they spend €1,800 each. I mean,
where do you get these facts? I mean, they're 100% true, but you're not reading them from anywhere. That's what freaks me out.
You should see me on a first date. I'm unbelievable. And there's a reason Bord Fáilte paid the Golf Channel to come over.
Yeah.
It's because they knew there's more in this market, and when Americans see this, they're going to lap it up. I would say Lynch's phone has been hopping ever since.
But it could have just as easily and unfortunately been that you will see maybe, say, Robert Rock pulling up his Galvin Green wet gear.
Sure.
Like tightened up, umbrella on, and it's bucketing rain, and he's just standing on the tee box, making sure that his glove is dry, stepping out, hitting a shot, and then getting back under an umbrella. I mean, that's also a feature of the Irish landscape.
Yeah.
But the absence of that and the idea of here's an Irish summer, oh, it's just like...
No, it worked. You need some luck, obviously.
Ah, yeah.
You're in the conditions. They got it. Like, for people, I mean, I'm sure it came across on television, the road that goes by the 18th. And by the way, there's just something so right about a road into a village by the 18th.
Yeah. It's just St Andrews, isn't it?
Traditional St, yeah, Andrews. It's how golf started, part of the town. So that was magical. That road goes all the way the length of the course. So you've got all the way down 18, all the way down 17, and then you've got the Klondike Green, which is where you hit over the blind shot, the fourth. And then you've got the tee shot for the par three.
The blind tee shot.
Which is blind. So honestly, it was just so picturesque all day. I bumped into a friend of ours, Ivor, and the scene was just people, elbows resting on the wall, ice creams, watching the various bits of golf,
brilliant,
and having a chat.
Can I ask
just,
you?
It was just brilliant. And there was one thing I wanted to tell you about before I forget, because, so that was the vibe. Honestly, that was it was just hanging out. And even Ivor was saying, well, you know what's nice about this? Sometimes you can be trapped on a golf course. We just went for a walk in the town a while back just to get away for an hour, grab a coffee.
And then come back.
Totally. Now, if you're in the middle of the K Club or Carton House or these places, trapped is the wrong word. But you're there. Your only salvation is the
Tented Village.
Tented Village, yeah. Which obviously is not to everybody's taste. Mm. It is what it is. On the Wednesday night, there was a media greeting where there's like open bar, free drinks, nice atmosphere, and they were on that evening. Eamon Foley, the captain, who by the way just so welcoming. That's the other thing. Paddy Keane, the general manager, like, hooked us all up with accommodation.
Amazing.
Just as a welcome. Porrick Slattery, whose father, Brud, was like the main man there for years, super welcoming. All these guys down there went out of their way to get to know people. I haven't experienced that at an Irish Open before. There was a genuine warmth about the thing. All these people, like Paddy Keane, the general manager, up to us every day. How are you getting on? What's the crack?
Really?
Anything we can do for you? Not happening at the other courses.
No.
It's a small thing, but it can mean a lot. So anyway, on that evening, they were presenting McGinley with Life Honorary Membership. So we're all there, we're sipping our drinks, we're media, free drinks, free food, we're happy, chatting away, just beside the clubhouse in a tented village. So they present McGinley with his jacket, and he speaks, someone timed it, just he speaks for 28 minutes, McGinley, kind of off the cuff, top of his head stuff. I was just brilliant, and it set things off in a nice tone. So he was talking about his relationship with Lahinch. So obviously he won the South of Ireland there in 91, which got him onto the Walker Cup team, which basically directed him towards being a pro. It's changed his whole life, winning the South of Ireland. And I knew that about his relationship with Lahinch. So I figured, yeah, he's going to have a certain soft spot for it. But he talked, and his dad was in the room, which was
Nick kind of, was there.
Yeah, we made it honestly special. So he was talking about Lahinch being one of those places. His dad would come down and play in for years, and he would come down with them and caddy with them. And he was, you know, not a great player then by his own admission, before he even went to the States and came back a really polished player to win the South of Ireland. And he remembered, you know, he was telling stories about, I remember coming down here, you know, summer evenings, my dad was here with his mates, and the Castle Golf Club is right across the road. Often there's a smaller golf course kind of across the road. So he's saying, the first time I ever broke 70 in my life was at the Castle Golf Club. I was like, the excitement, it broke 70. And he remembered, like, 9, 10 o'clock at night, still bright, running across the road, upstairs, into the clubhouse to tell his dad and his mates, I've just broken 70, you know. And one of his dad's mates was like, you know, they were all delighted for him. And I tell you what, if you can break 69 tomorrow, I'll give you 5 points. Different era. And he said, now remember, you're on your own. Cheating never pays. Mark the card properly. Next day, goes out, you know, fights for his life, breaks 69, runs back in. They're all still there. I mean, what a great life the McGinleys are having, by the way.
Yeah.
And he gets the 5 points. And his dad's in the room now. And he's like, so there's
an
impact. Yeah, there is an impact about it all. And in the South of Ireland, when he came back from the States, he said to his roommate, who's a Jimmy something, you got to come. Jimmy, a good player. McGinley, I think, was the number one player on the team. Jimmy, number two. Come to Lahinch, come to Ireland. Convinced him. So they both trekked over to Ireland. A big thing in those days. And he stayed with the McGinleys and they played different courses, including the South of Ireland. So Jimmy made it to like the quarterfinals. And it was a real novelty to have an American there, McGinley was telling us. And I think it was Charlie Mulqueen in the Cork Examiner. I think it was like the headline was like Big Burly Jimmy something does whatever. Big Burly Jimmy. And McGinley was saying, of our college mates, his nickname is still Big Burly Jimmy.
From the Cork Examiner.
And so when this was all kicking off in the last year or so, McGinley got on to Big Burly Jimmy and said, Jimmy, you made such an impact. People loved you down there. They'd love to see you. Do whatever it takes. Clear your schedule. Please come. And so Big Burly Jimmy was back in Lahinch in 2019. And the whole room obviously is just charmed. And you're thinking, God, there's a heart to this whole thing as well. This is not just a board member of the European Tour. Yeah. It's my rota. Look, there's strategy, you know, I don't want to go up near the Dublin market going where Portrush is on because it's saturated and people will only go to one golf tournament a month, that's for sure. So he started looking south of Dublin, but Lahinch had something, you know, and it was amazing kind of way to kick things off. And that was just a sense of the kind of atmosphere.
It's a great story.
Yeah, it was great to be there to hear it.
You tell it, though, as if to suggest, you know, these were different times when, you know, Paul McGinley's younger than me, by the way. So, but can I just say, this didn't happen in the 40s. This happened in the 90s. Like, I'd say it was the late 80s, early 90s, at the earliest.
Come here, did you find food rationing tough? Or?
yeah. McGinley's younger than me.
God, is he?
Yeah.
You are aging so well. It's frightening.
I've said it before, but so I used to be a member of Dunfanaghy Golf Links in Donegal, and Mick McGinley, Paul's dad, has been a lifelong member there. Mm. He's from there.
Mm.
And that's where Paul, I mean, besides obviously played in Dublin, but he also spent the summers up and he would be just practicing out on the course, just kind of grinding it out. And even by his own admission, not maybe the most natural golfer in the world, but really kind of worked hard. I think his dad instilled in him this real work ethic and a sense of like, look, when you set yourself the target, just work towards it. But his connections to Irish golf aren't, there's nothing fraudulent, or, you know, he's not telling a story to keep the audience happy. Like, these are real things, you know, and for that, I have to say, like, and I was listening to Paul on commentary with Ewan Murray, and first of all, can I just say, he's an unbelievably good commentator.
Yeah.
His analysis of golf is phenomenal. He's easy to listen to. He tells you interesting stuff all the time. But you could tell this, relief is not the word, but this great sense of accomplishment. And he was just like, yep, yeah, thank you very much, you know. And and in fairness, and he, like, you know, he had, like, the one big hurdle he had to surmount was no Rory McIlroy. And a bit like Brazil winning the Copa America without Neymar, the Irish Open survived just fine.
Did. Now, you miss, there's parallel experiences of a golf tournament. The TV audience misses Rory.
Sure it does.
He would be such a big part of the TV experience. But parallel to that, there is the experience of going to the tournament. You might be lucky to see McIlroy for 2, 3, 4 minutes. So your experience of a tournament, just because McIlroy, you know he's on the property, it's a nice thought, but it doesn't change your experience.
One of the things, though, that Ewan Murray kept saying, and it's a kind of, oh, it's like a tired cliche, it's like, oh, the Irish golf fan is so educated. And I'm like,
I'll lap that up all day long.
I know, so will I, but like...
I'll lap it up.
What does it mean? Does it mean that they don't get beard up and start yelling Baba Booey? Or they just... What do they applaud?
I think it means that... Like, okay, so there's the drink aspect on the American tour, which is grim.
Yeah, it's
just... Loads of people just boozed up. That is the 80, 90% of the reason they're there. I think...
They shut up when you're putting.
Sure. An American audience, watch your guy hit a 300-yard drive... lose their minds. The drive could be way offline. They just thought, ooh, that was cool. He hit that hard.
Yeah.
I think an Irish and a Scottish and an English audience understand when you're short-sighted on a green and you hit a good chip, even just to 8 feet.
Yeah.
And they applaud that with a sense of meaning. They understand that was a well-played, tricky scenario. They understand the different nuances of the game.
You know what? That's as good an explanation of it as I... Yeah. Yes. But I'm saying, I guess what I was thinking was like, I think Scottish audiences are just as educated.
They are.
And I imagine English audiences are just
as educated. I think it's an Irish and a UK thing.
Yeah, fair enough.
So to kind of wrap up Le Hinch talk, look, John Rahm, 62. Holy moly. You want a good winner. You got a great winner. He charmed everybody. He's amazing. 2 wins in 3 years. We'll see him next year. He's going to try and emulate Seve. A special talent. I hope he wins a major soon. I don't want this to become a... No. John, it's been 8, 9, 10 years now. It hasn't happened
Sergio
for you.
Sergio Garcia.
A little bit.
Did you see the... Did you hear the story of on the 13th?
Yeah.
Yeah. So...
People mightn't have, though.
Basically, he says, I used the same ball for the first 13 holes of the day. He and his caddy, normally change, but I was so locked into what I was doing, I made 6 birdies in a row until I made a 5 on 13. And then his caddy, Adam Hayes, just hands him a new ball. And as he handed Rahm the new ball, Hayes goes, you know what? This ball is the twin brother of the other ball. There's a lot more birdies coming in. So you're thinking, yeah, it's a bit hokey. Mm. Now, Rahm, telling the story afterwards, goes, he says, look, not that the balls have anything to do with it, right? But it's how funny that a comment like that from Adam or anybody can make you play more free. So that light-hearted kind of, here you go, here's the other ball's twin, go play with that. So whatever creeping doubt, whatever creeping stiffness in his flow might have come in after making bogey, just disappeared instantly. And the one thing, so I didn't read that story until after the event, but what I thought, with all respect to Robert Rock, who didn't play badly at all on the Sunday, just kind of dribbled around.
Yeah.
And, you know, look, you're not going to make the same number of birdies as you did on the Saturday. That's not going to happen. But what John Rahm's greatness struck me is that when he needed to, he played the golf he had to win.
Yeah, it was good.
It was amazing.
It's mad to think Robert Rock has given Matt Wallace a lesson or looking at him on the range, hitting a few wedges himself and then going out and shooting 60.
With, like, missing a 59 by, what, 6 inches?
And truly great hair.
Oh, my God, yeah.
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 Truly great. Yeah. He's just so... He's an elegant golfer. I played in the Pro-Am as well.
Go on.
Ryan Fox.
How did Ryan finish up?
I think he missed the cut. I think he was always going to...
Did you give him a lesson or did you kind of examine...
No, I left him. I left him be. So Ryan, just trying to think of anything. Son of Grant Fox, New Zealand rugby
player. Oh, is he?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Talented family. An All Black and a professional golfer. He's 101st, I think, in the world. Thereabouts. In the top 100, give or take.
Nice guy.
Really nice guy. You know, like so many of these guys, take away the halo effect, which we put upon all our sports stars. Incredibly normal.
Did he, was he engaging? Did he chat?
Quite engaging. Yeah, he was quite engaging. Gave us a bit of stuff about players on tour that I don't think he'd want me to repeat now.
Yeah, sure.
So gave us bits. Was not overly talkative, but was engaging. Kind of quiet, normal fella. Like, if he was one of your mates, you'd say, yeah, he's a decent fella. You know, I don't want to come on and be like, he was just amazing. A great guy. He was a good guy.
The other player
hit the ball a bazillion miles, by the way.
Did he?
Yeah. Ugh. A bazillion miles. If you're curious about the Pro-Am format, it's brilliant. It's really good, really clever what they do. So it's the pro plays his ball on each hole from start to finish, and it's best drive. So invariably...
It's his drive.
Now, not always, because they're teeing off a different tee.
Oh, so yeah, you could... And you hit a pretty big ball, so...
And Luke Fitzgerald, playing the rugby player, he hits a big ball as
He's
well.
He's off 8 or 7.
Yeah. And Tomas O'Shea as well. It was magic company, I have to say. It was just one of the great days.
Were they any good? Did they play well?
8 and 9.
I know, but did they play to that?
Like everyone chipped in. It was a nice vibe. But, so you take the best drive, say it's his, say it's not his. Like, once or twice he went in the rough. And so we would take our drive in the fairway. What I like then is it's not continued best ball. So once you're standing over your second shot, it's all your work all the way in.
Okay.
Yeah. So if you hit your second shot way right of the green, you're chipping from way right of the green. And what I also like is, so it's par's your friend. So if you're only putting for par, including your handicap, obviously, so, you know, net par, you kind of pick up the ball. It's birdies only. So if you've a shot on a hole, if you've a shot in a par four, you have to make a four. And the best part, I think, is it's none of this like two best scores a hole count. So if you have 3-4 birdies on a hole, if Ryan Fox birdies and me and the other lads birdie with our handicap, we're 4 under for that hole.
You are?
Mm.
Oh, wow.
So it's not two best scores.
And par's your friend, so you can't hurt.
Yeah, exactly.
So that format has changed, because the last time... So I played 2 Irish Open Pro-Ams, and the format for both was you just played your own ball. And what happens is, if you're playing with a player who is engaging, then you're... excuse me. You're chatting away, and he's part of the group. But if a player isn't engaging, he's just doing his own thing. He's kind of marking, he and the caddy are working on the course anyway. So, like, you could be playing alongside it, but as you said, because they're playing off the back tees, so it's not that much fun. So the idea of making it a team event,
it's
actually...
Great. And then they've leaderboards all around.
Oh, that's so brilliant.
We finished 5th.
Oh,
so I think the winning score was around 35 under.
Okay.
So when you think about it, that's about 2 birdies on average per hole, which is doable, you know? But, like, this great thing, so I went closer to the pin.
I saw that.
Yeah, which is amazing. So, for instance...
What'd you win?
Water for Crystal.
Oh, my God.
Like, where's my 4-ball on the hinge?
Come on, seriously.
Just give me a 4-ball.
Just even like a golf bag.
I don't have room for a Water for Crystal. Anyways, look,
so much of it.
Just in my little apartment in the town. But, you know, this was the beauty of the format. So, Ryan Fox, you know, hits his onto the green, didn't make birdie, picked up his ball. But so I landed... I didn't land 13 inches from the pin. I got it, you know, the contours took care of me. It wasn't an amazing shot by any means.
What hole is it on?
The 8th.
The 8th, so it's the blind one.
No, it's not blind.
Oh, no, sorry, that's the...
The 5th.
Yeah, sorry.
It's the one that Harrington made birdie on and lifted his hat up to let
that's
people
right.
know he got a birdie. So, like, I landed 13 inches. So I put from 13 inches and then... Tomas puts his ball, puts from 13 inches. Luke puts his ball down.
I presume they all made.
Yes, we all made it. I mean, we were laughing. There was a lot of
if
like...
someone hadn't...
There was really like, don't look at me. America kept catching Tomas O'Shea's eyes. And I was just like, Tomas, stop. So suddenly for that hole, we picked up 3 birdies.
Yeah.
It's a deadly format.
It's a
great format.
I think, obviously, given that the Open is in Portrush, and the first Pro-Am I ever played was... for the Irish Open when it was at Portrush, it's time for me to dig out my Portrush story, where I was playing with 3 guys and what's his name, the French pro, not Jacqueline, no, it'll come to me now, oh my god,
firm friends afterwards though,
obviously, like, I haven't seen his name, he's kind of disappeared, really. I haven't seen him playing a lot
ever since he saw what happened on that day. He's
on the first tee, so Rory's teeing off ahead of us. And so there's like thousands of people lining the first tee because they're all watching Rory, and they haven't really moved on when we come on, and it's terrifying.
Sure.
Was there a lot of crowd when you were there?
7:45 a.m. So only for the second 9.
Oh my god!
Nice.
It was like, so you're coming in underneath the grandstand to get onto the first tee, and there's like crowds everywhere, and you have to have a caddy, and they're all wearing white, and it's really intimidating.
You're nervous.
It's really nervous. So the lowest handicapper in our group, with the exception of the pro, goes, well, I'll go first. So they're like, well, braver you than me. And so he slices one off the first and hits a spectator square between the eyes. And you realise that the worst sound in golf is 4,000 people all going, oh, like this.
Did he shout 4?
Yes. Oh, yeah. No, everyone yelled 4. Like, there was no, like, there was not, no one did anything untoward.
Yeah.
And it was heartbreaking. But in fairness to him,
How injured was she?
Pretty injured. Like, there was an ambulance called and everything.
Ah, stop.
No, there was. She was fine.
Yeah, because post Brooks Koepka at the Ryder Cup, this isn't funny.
No. No, no, she was fine.
Yeah.
Sorry. But
an ambulance was called.
An ambulance was called to make sure that she was fine. And we heard at the end of the round that nothing was wrong.
Now, okay, so we can laugh now.
Yeah, well, no, we could laugh. This is, I have to tell the full story. So being Ireland and being this weird nature of humour that we have.
I'm just going to jump in quickly. I think that'd be me done. I think I'd be saying, right.
Okay.
I'm going to stay with this woman until I know she's fine. Lads, nice to meet you, but
he wanted to. In fairness to him, he really did. I mean, he was shook. He was ashen faced.
Oh,
like, he went white. And the thing is,
you just don't expect to do that.
But it didn't help that the other two in the group, not the pro, the amateurs, just tortured him for the next like 10 holes. We were like going, like, would you know? When would you know that brain damage had really occurred? Like, would you know? Like, say you're drinking a cup of tea and all of a sudden you miss your mouth and sort of. And it was like. I mean, maybe it was just dealing with the kind of nerves of it all. But anyway, he rallied and he got the most beautiful birdie on Calamity that I could ever imagine.
Good for him.
Like, it was amazing.
Not easy.
And anyway, but that happened to poor Rush.
We're going to finish the podcast with Paul McGinley on the phone line reflecting on an amazing time at Lynch. We're going to move on to Portrush rather, and we'll reflect on Lynch. But look, it's great. The sponsors are staying on for next year, that's for sure. They have an option for two more years. The talk is Harrington was due to do it in 2020, but the Ryder Cup situation has complicated that. He was a bit reticent about doing both in the same year. It's a five-year rota. McGinley, Harrington, Clark, McDowell, Rory. McGinley says he's definitely done until at least 5 years.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so I don't know who will step in if Harrington doesn't want to. It all gets a bit complicated. McDowell, Clark come in, but that they would want it in the north, you feel.
Yeah.
Maybe the Northern Ireland Tourist Board has spent more than their fair share on golf this year. So a bit of it up in the air. And I think, you know, the sponsors are not against a Dublin setup sometime soon because, you know, from a sponsorship point of view, a Dublin market's a good one to get. So that's where the Irish Open is. And is the complication that a WGC may be moving to this exact week next year with the Tokyo Olympics on.
Yeah.
So this is all going to be hashed out in Portrush, actually. Jay Monahan is going to meet Keith Pelly.
I was speaking to someone at the Northern Irish Tourist Board, just separate to any of this, and I was asking, so how are things going? They're like, obviously, they're all about the Open.
Yeah.
And I think, God bless her, like, she, at the end, she was just like, I just can't wait for this to be over.
Oh, I see.
It's just every single resource, every single, yeah, everything they have is all focused on making sure that this event goes off,
yeah,
without a hitch.
Let's turn to Portrush and a few other bits and pieces. So, first things first on Portrush, Tiger Woods, and we have some audio here. Jojo's going to fire it outside. Tiger Woods released, frankly, a strange.
Oh my God.
It was strange, this. So, I don't know. Nike, Tiger, they're just doing their thing. So, this is Tiger pretending. I don't believe this for a second. Pretending that he's already getting his body clock set up for the massive, what, 5 hour time difference over a week out. So this is Tiger pretending it's 1 a.m. in the morning.
Hey, Nike, it's Tiger. Wake up! It is now 1 a.m. here on the East Coast. Why am I doing this right now? Because it is now 6 a.m. at Royal Portrush. I'll be playing the Open Championship there. And in order to be prepared for the time change, I'm getting up. If you want to succeed, if you want to get better, if you want to win, you want to accomplish your goals, well, it starts with getting up early in the morning. Have a great day.
Oh, Tiger.
First of all, he's not very good at it. So he's reading from a script, or he's...
Hey, Nike.
Hey, Nike. It's like, what? Is Nike a person now? And second of all, this is like, Tiger, you've been on tour for 20 years. You've played every Open Championship. Like, what? What are you talking about?
Yeah.
It's all a bit, it's all that kind of trying to get that native advertising thing going, trying to get like, oh, like comedy moments. He's looking at Phil's little bits. And, you know, Phil's kind of, for all of whatever, but Phil's kind of funny.
Oh, yeah.
Tiger, maybe not so much.
I wouldn't miss a Phil Mickelson.
No.
Fireside chat.
No. Ugh. Although more serious issues,
yes,
around, look, Portrush is not the tropical paradise that maybe Tiger Woods' back needs it to be,
yeah,
for it to function to its full effect. So, you know, I don't know what Tiger's odds are, but like, I don't know. I don't, this is a terrible thing to say, but I just don't see him doing anything.
Yeah. Do you know what's interesting about the back thing is that Freddie Couples always said he preferred playing in terrible, cold, awful weather. People thought, really? With your back? I would have thought it's the opposite. And he said, well, look, my back's never going to be great, so I'd rather everybody else felt a bit stiff and sore as well. So maybe it works both ways, though Pebble Beach suggested, not so sure.
I don't imagine that Dustin Johnson's back's going to be affected one
way
or the other. Or
if he has four layers on, maybe.
Yeah.
John Huggan wrote a very interesting piece on Max Faulkner, winner of the Open in 1951 at Portrush. Don't know much about Max, but it's a good piece. So different bits and pieces. Ewan Murray of Sky Sports played with this guy.
Amazing.
Isn't it? In golf, you're like 1 degree of separation because they can play for so long. He said, Max, a magnificent ball striker, maybe one notch down from the very best, is what Ewan said. He played with him when Faulkner was 57 in his last European Tour event in Scotland. A lovely character to the end, softer when he stopped drinking, is what Ewan said. And there's a few stories. He was a bit of a hellraiser in his way. For instance, Peter Alice said, Max could be crude and rude on occasion, which did not go down well. He passed off as banter things that today might get him arrested. He was outrageous, and he never seemed to put on weight, even as he got older, despite drinking endless cups of tea with mountains of sugar. And then this is just poetry from Alice here. At the end, it all got a bit sad. His clothes got a bit grubby. You could see wear and tear where his right hand had gone into the pocket of his trousers for the tees countless times. He needed to send it all to the cleaners more often. He was like a stately old home, living out his last days in decaying elegance.
Yeah.
So basically, that was very much the peak for him, winning the Open in 51. He won the Portuguese Open in 68. His behaviour, said Duggan as he aged, however, became more erratic, veering from humorous to mildly disturbing. Mad Max was one of the nicknames they gave to him. Apparently, he would always speak in Cockney slang.
So, really? Cockney rhyming slang?
Yeah. Compliment him on a good drive and he would say, I gave that a right fourpenny one. Okay. I never understood that, says Ewan Murray. He used a lot of Cockney rhyming slang. A four iron was a dorking hole. Meat and veg was a wedge. Tom Mix was a six. A cranky old woman was a boiler. He was such fun to be around, said somebody.
I was going to say, you're just reading him already. I hate him. That's terrible.
It's not terrible.
You get the feeling that they're all speaking quite euphemistically about.
You suspect so, yeah.
Yeah.
But it was a good piece by
kind,
John Duggan.
But kind,
yeah, yeah, yeah. Like, they talked about he raised huge amounts of money for cancer charities.
Yeah.
Not a bad guy at all. But just a bit like, funny, when you were talking about Sam Snead earlier on, he was of that vintage, I suspect.
It's exactly what I was thinking when you were reading the quotes. I was thinking these are guys that like were given no favours, probably looked upon by the gentlemen members of the golf club that they represent with like looked down their noses at them. So, you know, the club pro or the pro working out of the club was not an exalted figure. So, you know, Max Faulkner. Do you know what is funny? If you said, if you'd asked me before you'd mentioned it, who won the Open in 1951, I'd have been like, I have no idea.
Yeah, he hasn't.
Peter Thompson.
He's not a great name.
No.
Yeah. So, Portrush, any immediate thoughts? We're going to do a big pod on this next week. I mean, it's going to be great. That's kind of the short version, isn't it?
It's one of the best courses I've ever played. I wish I'd played it better the day I played it. It intimidated me. I have kind of blurred memories, mostly because my playing partner, no, it's because it was my first pro-am. I found the whole experience quite overwhelming and amazing. But the course itself, and you played it recently, didn't you?
About a month ago, yeah.
Okay, so there's a whole, it's a big long one, that kind of big long downhill dogleg to the right. And it is one of the most staggeringly beautiful holes I've ever seen in my life.
And look, there are lots of catch your breath moments
like
in that
course. Calamity, the 14th, with the par 3 up the hill onto.
The new par 5, the 7th, is stunning.
Really?
Oh, carved out of the sand dunes. It looks like it's been there forever. They've done such a good job. They pumped 17 million into the town. There was a great interview with a Wilma Erskine, who's been, quote, the boss, that's her nickname.
All right.
At Portrush since the 80s. You know, Darren Clark gave it to her. People say she's the woman not to be messed with because I think her title is like secretary or something, but people would come, you know, to do work or whatever and be like, you know, they wouldn't understand secretary, what it meant. So the boss is like her nickname. And she was remembering a time in the 80s. And this is like a triumph of Northern Ireland more than anything, but Portrush is part of that story. And in the 1980s, I think it was 85 or 86, there were three Americans, one three ball from America, booked in. And they were so excited on the calendar, they circled it. The Americans, you know. Because who in their right mind would go to Northern Ireland?
Yeah,
yeah, at that time. And now she says, like, she did a piece with, I think it might have been John Hogan as well. Anyway, she did a piece where she said, like, now when they ring, it's not like, what month can you get out? It's what year can we get out? The turnover of the course is like 5 million a year. So it's... Portrush is a microcosm of the Northern Irish journey. Obviously, look, Brexit is an unravelling mess and Stormont is a mess at the moment as well. But on the whole, yeah, like, it's in such a great place. It's a really good interview and she's been a big part of getting the course
also,
there.
Also, it's location and putting the tourist hat on because it's on the Causeway Coast.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
you've got Bushmills nearby, you've got Giant's Causeway. I'm very much of the Samuel Johnson school of, like, you know, worth seeing, not worth going to see.
Yeah.
You know, but the Causeway Coast itself is gorgeous.
Yeah.
Like, and then you've got also, so let's say you're disappointed, you're listening and you want to come play it and you're disappointed because you have to wait another year before you can get a tee ball on Portrush, go to Port Stewart.
Port Stewart's great. Yeah.
It's like 3 miles down the road. It's amazing.
The first 6-7 holes there. Yeah.
So you're absolutely right. It is, again, because it's a royal course. Like, you know, it's always been very privileged. It's always been quite exclusive. It's expensive, but not disappointing in any way,
is
the point. So, like, even though the green fees are not cheap, whatever, I think it's like 180 sterling or something like that, which, you know, compared to, say, Pebble Beach. I think it's a way better course than Pebble Beach. Way better.
Mm.
Like, there's no argument for me. None. Mm. Like, I think Portrush, Royal County Down, and Port Stewart are three of the best links courses.
Yeah, it's amazing in that small part of the world. Mm. She told, by the way, a nice story about Rory McIlroy where she was, you know, some lad kept asking for a ringing, going, can I speak to Wilma? I guess it's McIlroy. She's like, hi, it's Rory here. Can I come and play the course? And she said, Rory, you're the course record holder. You're a four-time major winner. You're an honorary member. You don't need to ring me to ask can you play the course.
Brilliant.
And he said, but you told me if I wanted to play to always be courteous and to ring ahead. She said, that's when you were 16.
So great.
He comes out of that story so well.
He does.
Yeah, doesn't he?
That's really lovely.
Yeah, I would have thought like his management company are like, sort that out for me.
Yeah.
Apparently they closed the course last weekend for McIlroy to practice.
Did they?
The members didn't love that, I'm sure.
No.
But it's Rory McIlroy. Can I play a bit of McIlroy's?
Yeah, please.
So, look, he's over at the Scottish Open.
Yeah.
You know, not at La Hinch. He's over at the Scottish Open.
Well, in fairness to him, he did make that argument. I mean, I know I like kind of occasionally needling some of Rory's decisions. But in this one, he did say, I don't want to play 2 weeks in a row before the Open Championship, but I do want to play the week before. So La Hinch was always going to get dropped.
Fair enough. So here is Rory. By the way, like when you hear this, he's having a nice life. So they're just kind of checking in. What have you been up to since Pebble, kind of a thing.
Rory, as you said, you haven't played since the US Open. Can you just give us a sense of what you've been up to in terms? I know you mentioned being there on Saturday, but what else have you been up to in the lead up to this week?
So spent the week in California after Pebble Beach. Went down to Big Sur for a few days and just sort of switched off. Had a nice retreat, and then we went to LA for a couple of days. Back to Florida for about 10 days. Did some work with Michael. Worked on the house, trying to move in. And then spent 4th of July up in upstate New York with Erica's parents. And then flew Friday night to get into Belfast Saturday. Had the weekend in Northern Ireland and then over here. So it's sort of... It's been a nice, you know, combination of a bit of chill-out time and a bit of practice.
And what did you think of Portrush when you saw it with the stands up? I'm sure it looks very different than you've seen it before.
You know, I was saying to someone yesterday, I expected it to feel different than it did. It still just feels like Portrush to me. Yes, the stands are up and it looks fantastic, but it's still the same golf course. You know, it's still, you know, I haven't played it much over the last few years. We played the Irish Open there in 12. Haven't really, you know, I played the new holes just before the Irish Open at Port Stewart a couple of years ago. Played 18 holes in October. I haven't really played. So I was sort of a little, you know, do I need to really familiarize myself again with this place? How much time am I going to need to spend? And then as soon as I got onto the first tee, like, it all just sort of started coming back to me. Everything, okay, yeah, on the second tee, I am at the Brown House, and the fourth, this is a lot, you know, like, everything just started to come back. So it felt like just the same old golf course that I've you know, grew up playing, and but it was great to see it. You know, it's been a long time in the making, and you know, obviously everyone over there is so excited for next week.
Says Rory's in good form. He did his Carson Daly podcast as well.
Oh, I saw that.
It's fine, I think.
Just 2 hours, will you, for God? Come on.
Carson could just get so much more out of him. It breaks my heart.
I know.
Breaks my heart.
You know that it's all private plane, don't you? It's like, you know, I mean, if maybe Big Sur to LA, he's driving, but then LA to Florida, private plane, up to upstate New York, private plane.
Yeah, if he's doing economy, it's still a nice way to spend your life.
No, but I'm saying is that, like, you know, this is, oh, man.
It's a good life.
It's a good life,
isn't it?
It's a funny thing, and he's, oh, look, he knows Port Rush really, really well, but he's a high ball hitter, and, you know, he's good enough to amend his game, but, like, he's no way has to be, like, top of the thought tree for, like, Port Rush, I don't think. He's a high ball hitter. He plays a particular type of golf that isn't necessary, and I'm sure a listener will go, Fionn, he has the course record at Port Rush. So obviously he knows how to go low in Port Rush. I absolutely agree with that. But generally speaking, this is a guy who favours non-linksy.
I just think comfort is so big.
Yeah. You know,
one of the more interesting things in his Carson Daly chat was where he was talking about how he now wants to... The big thing he's working on is to give himself permission to be aggressive. He talked about the Tour Championship. Remember Tiger beat him last year? 3 shots back. And he was like, I was just hanging on to the club. I was conservative and I should have been going at flags.
Really?
Yeah, so he's now saying, if I'm going to lose, I want to lose aggressively.
That's, well, yeah, that makes sense.
Mindset at the moment. Harry Colt designed Port Rush.
That's right.
Harry Colt designed Hamilton, where McIlroy won the Canadian Open recently.
Yeah.
Harry Colt designed Royal Liverpool, McIlroy won his Open. So there's obviously something about the way Colt sets up a golf course that suits him, suits his eye.
Harry Colt designed Dunfanaghy as well.
He's been around.
Yeah.
But anyway, so... We'll get stuck into this more now. No one needs a preview this early. And like anything, look, any number of guys can win.
Speaking of links courses, do you see that the first 12 women members of Muirfield were welcomed this week? No.
Okay.
That I know of. No.
Okay.
But 12 women have been invited to take up membership 275 years after the club was established. And so they took a membership from the 1st of July. And oddly enough, ironically, you know, there was the two votes. The first one, so they were bounced off the open rota because only 64% of the club voted in favour the first time. So they had the second vote and 80%, you know, because clearly they were told, we're going to lose the open. Like so. But anyway, that's obviously a good bit of news. But the irony is this, that their membership was fast-tracked. Because apparently it takes way longer than just a couple of years
to get in.
To get in, so they're like, you know,
you got to get the Open Mac, and like it's a brilliant Open course. It has, I think, the best list of winners.
Yeah,
it's phenomenal.
Yeah,
you had an interesting stat before we.
Kyle Porter, CBS Sports, he did this thing. So strokes gained, he did a whole thing on strokes gained, and basically, so from the 2004 season onwards. The PGA is using strokes gained and breaking it up, strokes gained from the tee, strokes gained tee to green, so on and so forth, as a much more accurate indicator of a player's success.
Yeah.
And he came up with like these five kind of interesting conclusions. And so like basically he's talking about strokes gained per round. So like for instance, on any given season, Tiger gains 2 strokes per round. That means he's on average 2 strokes better than the field average. Now, again, you're pretty familiar with the way strokes gained works.
Everyone listening is, let's not.
Okay, so we don't have to.
Everyone
okay,
gets
so one is that Tiger is the greatest of all time. Not that there was much doubt about this, but even in the strokes gained statistics, he is. He's had the top 3 seasons for strokes gained, 2006, 2007, and 2009, and recorded 6 of the top 10. he's the only golfer to clear 3 strokes gained per round, and he did it 3 times.
Right.
And that's ignoring his best ever season, which is 2000, when he was nearly 4 strokes gained per round.
Right.
Which is just astronomical.
Yeah.
Rory's 2019 season, and I am as guilty as many to kind of throw a little if into the into Rory's season. He wanted to contest, so basically Kyle Porter wanted to contextualise Rory McIlroy's year. He's averaging 2.7 strokes gained per round, which is the best non-Tiger number of the 3,040 seasons, cumulatively, yeah, of all the players that he's looked at since 2004. Yeah.
This year?
This is the best non-Tiger season. So if you just take Tiger out of the equation, Rory McIlroy is having the best year of any golfer since 2004.
Wow.
Okay.
Interesting. Good.
So it's also the fourth best strokes gained ever officially recorded. And we're talking about someone, clearly, whose people are going, eh, he's not having that good year. If you put it Dustin Johnson in with Woods and McIlroy, you get 11 of the top 13 strokes gained seasons since 2004. The only other golfers to crack the top 13, Furyk 2006, Luke Donald in 2011.
Wow.
Yeah,
Luke.
Interesting. Mm. And then it kind of gets difficult to, he makes the point, it gets difficult to square this with what Brooks Koepka is doing in major championships, where strokes gained are often not measured, but in terms of pure golf for the entire season, these are the undisputed top three: Dustin Johnson, Rory McIlroy, Tiger Woods. At the bottom of the food chain, now, again, you know, he puts it in because curious minds are curious. There has been 2 seasons of minus 3 strokes gained, so lost, since 2004. Stephen Bowditch posted minus 3.2 in 2016. David Gossett, minus 3.5 in 2004. But that's not as interesting. And then let's go back to this year. And so this is the stat that fascinated him more than anything. There are currently 4 2019 seasons inside the all-time top 20. So McIlroy's 2019 is number 4 all-time. Johnson's is number 12 all-time this season. And then it gets wild. Patrick Cantlay, 2.19, and Adam Scott, 2.16, are numbers 18 and 19, respectively, all-time.
Okay.
So he's suggesting
all time since 2004.
Well, since strokes gained is established. Yeah, absolutely. Now, it's 15 years, which is, you know, it's a decent, well, it's 3,040.
Yeah.
Anyway, so what he's saying is that these basically, and coincidentally, he's putting it down to the fact that both Patrick Cantlay and Adam Scott are known as being ferociously good ball strikers. So he's, anyway, I thought it was just an interesting little kind of look at statistics. And obviously, for our perspective, Rory McIlroy is playing the best golf of his career, nearly.
Yeah.
It just because he's not translated into a major, we're somehow going, eh.
Yeah.
He's won twice, finished top 10, whatever number of times.
Look, I just said I gave him a big chance at Port Rush, and you're like...
Yeah, but my point, I guess, is that if he doesn't win a Port Rush, it's in no way a reflection of Rory's season.
Mm. And yet so cruelly.
It will be.
It will be.
Of course it will.
It's tough, isn't it? Right, we've got to wrap this up. John Daly not going to be a Port Rush because they won't give him a cart. And rightly so, say all of us.
Absolutely.
Matthew Wolff is just worth a mention. He won the 3M Open, former Oklahoma State star. So he's now on the tour through to 2021. This is his maiden PGA Tour victory, just his third start as a professional. He's gone from, when he rocked up in Minnesota, 1,659th in the world, up 1,524 spots, to number 135 in the world, 20 years old. What they're saying about Wolff is he's the, or one of, the most hyped golfers to turn pro since Woods in 1996. He won 6 times with Oklahoma State in his sophomore year, including the NCAA title by 5 shots, signed up by TaylorMade.
He's only the third NCAA title winner to win on the PGA Tour. Tiger Woods, Matthew Wolff, and
Ben Crenshaw.
That's right.
His kind of, look, his swing is quirky. Matthew Wolff, if you didn't catch any of this, have a look. But they're saying this guy's the real, real, real deal. Him and Victor Hovland are the two big hopes. And he won in really good fashion as well.
Did you see, I can't remember who it was, one of Brandel Chamblee or one of those guys was kind of going, I can't wait for Ryder Cup 2022 or whatever it was, when you got Matthew Wolff, Victor Hovland playing against each other. Yeah. These are the guys to be looking out for.
Yeah, so that's a real big name suddenly, like third tournament he's won.
Before we go, just to go back to Le Hinch, just a nod of congratulations to both Cormac Sharvin and Robin Dawson as the Irish players who did very, very well. Mm. Well, Cormac Sharvin, who's out of our glass, isn't he? Finished with a 70, tied 15th.
That's yeah, no, it's great. No, it's brilliant for him.
Yeah.
But we really do have to go now. We're going to leave you with the Paul McGinley interview. This was an off the ball on Monday when he was feeling pretty good about life after the Irish Open at Lahinch. We'll have a big old Open preview next week. We'll try and do it on a Wednesday. And a reminder, we've got our golf off the ball golf open in Abu Dhabi this November 17th. It's the National Abu Dhabi Golf Course, the Yas Links. There's drinks reception. There's a Peter Lorry Golf Clinic, an off-the-ball roadshow, gala awards dinner, airport golf transfers, golf bag allowance, return flights with Etihad, 5 nights in a 4-star hotel. If you're interested, offtheball.com/open. So that is us done. Fionn, thanks a mil.
Thanks, Joe.
And we'll leave you. This is Paul McGinley on Monday night in Off the Ball. Very happy after the Irish Open. We'll talk to you next week. Good luck.
Beaten the best of Europe, in Port Stewart 2 years ago. You came with a fast charge last year, and nearly won again at Ballyliffin. Would you like to see the best of the Americans coming over here and competing in the Irish Open, and you can beat them here again?
I mean, I would like to see it. I believe I can do it. No, I don't really know what to say. Yeah, I mean, it would be amazing to see some of the best players in the world come over and play, because they really are missing some of the best golf courses I've ever played in my life. I always say Port Stewart, the front nine, is arguably the most beautiful front nine I've ever played. And I can honestly say on all the golf courses I've played in the world, this is probably one of the best I've played. Some people might say some of the holes are quirky. I just decided to say it's different. It's unique. It's traditional. And you need to play really good golf to shoot low around here. I mean, we got lucky. It wasn't windy. If it was windy, we would have seen a test of golf, because none of those shots are easy. It's a great golf course. It's a great tournament. It's a great host country, and you know, they're missing out a lot. They would have a lot of fun here.
Just one follow-up, if you wouldn't mind, for me. Seve's on that twice. Seve's on three times. So that must be a target for you. And Spanish names are dotted all over that. But would it be nice to come back? You said you told us you were going to come back and defend after you won at Port Stewart. You came back to Ballyliffin. Probably early to give a commitment, but all being well, will we see you here back next year going for number three?
Do I even need to respond to this question?
No, just, nice guy.
I can't say again how much I like the country of Ireland. I mean, yeah, you'll see me here, and hopefully I get my third one and tie Seve. I mean, that's my goal from now on, coming to this event. Hopefully I can get to as many as Seve.
And tournament host Paul McGinley has joined us. Hi, Paul.
Hi. Hi, Joe. How are you?
Very good. He'd be very welcome back anytime. What a great winner.
Yeah, I know. What a great winner. That's right, I guess. You know, if you're not going to have an Irish winner, the highest-ranked player in the field gives a lot of validation to the setup as well as the golf course, and that's what John brought.
Yeah, good courses tend to find good winners, don't they? And he addressed even the quirkiness of the course there, and he doesn't see it that way. So it's a validation for the whole thing. Where are you at the moment? Are you still down there?
No, I'm back in the UK. I left this morning. I'm back in the UK. I got a busy week. Got a number of things going on this week. It's all 100 mile an hour, right in the middle of my busy period in my work schedule.
How has the week just been gone for you?
Oh, I mean, Joe, it's just been phenomenal. To be honest, it's absolutely off the charts how well it's gone. It couldn't have gone any better, really. I mean, I can't think of anything that you could say, yes, I wish that was better. I mean, the weather was great, the course was great, the condition. And the big thing was the embracement of the Irish public, and particularly around the whole idea of a festival. And they really did. They partied. There was thousands and thousands, tens of thousands of people that came every day. We'd sell out crowds and the streets at night, you know, you'd 2,000 or 3,000 on Main Street up to 1-2 o'clock in the morning. You'd 4,000 or 5,000 down the promenade at the, you know, where we had a bit of music going on, and also the fireworks display on the Saturday night. And everybody was in good form. Everybody enjoyed it. They came in with the right spirit. And, you know, there wasn't one report of any incident to the Gardaí. I mean, the Gardaí were just like, this is the easiest job they've ever done. Mm. What more can you say about the Irish public than that?
I think, in fairness to you, you sowed that seed very well. You told people what this was going to be, and Irish people understand, OK, a festival vibe, I get that. We like our festivals. There are great festivals in that part of the world. And it had that atmosphere from Pro-Am Day. People bought into that.
Yeah, that's exactly what I believe. I believe the Irish Open, Dubai Duty Free Irish Open, as it's called, should be the should be a festival every year, you know, and we should bring it around the country. We should showcase our wonderful country, showcase us as a tourist destination, showcase our great golf courses, but have fun doing it, you know. I mean, I'm a great believer in fun, trying to create fun. Ryder Cup captaincy is one, my biggest number one thing addressing the players was about having fun. And if you're having fun doing stuff, and the Irish psyche is about fun, you know, and if you buy into that and create all kinds of activities, not just for the fellas who are up till 2 o'clock in the morning having a few drinks in the street, but also the family atmosphere, you know, face painters and, you know, jugglers and all the kind of stuff went in. It was a really family vibe down there, and everything was in good form. And you create the platform, Joe, which is what we did, but it's up to people then to embrace it. And that's the thing that's most humbling, is that they did. They did buy into it, as you say.
What was the flow of the week like for you? Were you running here, there, everywhere? Was it a million miles an hour at all times? Or what were you up to for the vast majority of it?
Yeah, it was a million miles an hour. It was. I had to do a little bit of Sky each day. They wanted me to do a little bit of a guest commentary each day, which I did. And I also had my foundation. I had 50 people a day in my shebeen, as I called it, you know, who paid a nice premium that were going to leave a lot of money in the local community and raise funds for that. And then tournament host, you know, meeting Miguel Villador in the evening time, going through the pins for the following day and checking in with Brian, the greenkeeper, on how everything is going, and Paddy Keane, a general manager, and getting feedback every day, you know, and so we do an early morning meeting. All that goes through. We go through all the faces for the day, and off you go into another day and let people get on with it and have fun.
I lost count of the number of people I met who said it was the best Irish Open they've pretty much been to. And I'd find it hard to disagree with them, really. The course, there's such a lovely tradition about the whole thing. You know, even the wall up by the 18th and elbows resting there and watching the golf. There's something lovely about, you know, that whole setup. Tradition right the way through the course. The proximity to town. Yeah, like I spoke to a lot of people who said it's just lovely, because golf is a tough spectator sport, you know, not everybody gets the passes and can go inside the ropes or get into the nice tents. But people were saying it was great even just to be able to go for a walk around the town for an hour or two during the day as well. The festival feel we mentioned, the goodwill of the locals, the volunteers, like I'm sure at all these events people are briefed to be nice, but there was a real sincerity about the whole town, I felt. And then you mentioned the club, you know, the likes of Paddy Keane, who I met, and Pádraig Slattery, Eamon Foley, the captain. All of these guys went out of their way to make people feel welcome. I'd say, you know, it's very difficult for you to express gratitude, you know, right down to the guy who was in great form at the you know, the park and ride area or letting people in, because all of that's so important.
Yeah, I mean, that's absolutely right. Everything you've mentioned there, Joe, was one of the reasons why I felt so strongly that Leith should be the venue. There was a lot of debate went on before we got Leith over the line, and, you know, I had to exert quite a bit of pressure in order for people to buy into the idea that Leith was the venue. And it's great that it's turned out that way. But the reason why I was so keen to have it was, you know, the quality of people down there, as you mentioned, you know, all those officers of the club. I'll add John Gleeson, the chairman, into that. I mean, I'm in daily contact with these guys now for a year and 3 months. You know, every day we have some kind of communication on something. And, you know, these things don't happen by chance. I had a great team, a wonderful team around me. And you know, we put some really good people in place. And then we worked with the European Tour. I've obviously got experience of working with them and their setups and all that kind of stuff. And I was able to help Leith with that and kind of, you know, broach that between the two. And then the Gardaí and the County Council as well. I mean, they were amazing what they did and how they rode in behind it. And, you know, there's a few boxes to be ticked as well, too, from a corporate place, putting on my director of the European Tour hat. You know, we had the chairman of Rolex there playing the Pro-Am, Joe, and he'd never come to a Rolex event before. You know, this guy's writing, you know, a massive cheque for tens of millions. And for him to come and to see it firsthand was great. And the Gardaí helped me so much with all that. He stayed in the Dare Manor, blown away with that. So all those things are good for our country. You know, the legacy is left behind. The money is left behind. And also the future as well, too. People are looking at it all over the world, and Golf Channel and everywhere, and thinking, wow, this looks amazing. And, yeah, let's go and visit. And, you know, that's the whole idea of an Irish Open. It's not to pay these rich sportsmen even more money. It's to promote our country. And that's what I felt we achieved more than anything.
Just one other point on Leith to touch on. People are aware, I think, that you won the South of Ireland there. You spoke on Wednesday evening for nearly half an hour, actually, about your relationship with Leith at a media reception. And you were receiving an honorary membership that evening as well. And everybody knew you'd won the South of Ireland, which got you on the Walker Cup team and really has dictated the course of your life. So it's always going to have a special place in your heart for those reasons. But equally, the Castle Golf Course around the road, where the first time I think you broke 70, your father and his mates were down there as well. There's a lovely story as well about your roommate from US College who you dragged over for the South of Ireland. And people may not be aware that there is a genuine link to Lahinch. It's not just like you flew in and out for the South of Ireland and haven't given the place a second thought since.
Yeah, I do have a lot of links down there, no doubt. Great history of the places to me, and I caddy for my dad. I mean, I wasn't a particularly good player. I don't think I was old enough or good enough to play in the South till I was about 19 years old. But I have a lot of contacts with other places as well, too. You know, caddying for dad all those early days when he played the championships up in Ross's Point. I have a lot of friends up there, too. I know that I'm familiar with that. Port Rush, where I lost in the final twice, a lot of goodwill up there too. And you know, I'm so proud of all our country, not just Lahinch, but there are a lot of connections with Lahinch. And you know, one of the things that's really important is the people in charge of the club. You know, and when I went down to celebrate the 125 year anniversary a couple of years ago, 2.5 years ago, you know, it became crystal clear to me, yeah, these guys are real quality people. And you know, when then Rory called about me taking over this hosting, I started thinking of venues. And you know, moving away from the north was critical. Anything from Dublin north was going to be, you know, conflicted with the same people and the same corporate that was going to be involved in the Open Championship in Portrush. And I thought we needed to open up a new market. So that's why I look south. And when I look south, Lahinch and the people, the officers at the club, were the outstanding one. And that's why I worked hard to try to get them over the line, and glad to say that happened.
What was your roommate's name again that you dragged over from the States to play in the South of Ireland that year?
Yeah, it's a good story. John Adams. He was there again this week, Joe. We brought him over this week from California.
Yeah.
Burly John Adams. What's the great thing about John is he came over, and he's a happy-go-lucky American. He was a great guy. I was the number one player in our team. He was the number two. He's a good player. He came over. Never been over to Europe before. Got blown away, but his personality was just infectious, and people really took to him. And one of Dad's friends, who was down on holiday and having a few pints at night, decided to caddy for him, Timmy Downs. And they made a great rapport, and they actually chatted this week. And those kind of things, you know, those friendships. That's what's great about the game of golf. The places you go, the people you meet. And, and we certainly had that with John, and he came over. And he's always had a connection with Lahinch as a result. And he came over again last week, and he was cracking. He was great cracking.
Yeah, amazing.
But when he did well, he got to the quarterfinal, and one of the Irish newspapers, I think it was Charlie McQueen and the Examiner, called him Burly John Adams, because he does carry a few pounds. And when we went back to college, that was his nickname, and to this day, that's still his nickname.
And Burly John Adams was back at Lahinch, so it kind of came full circle, which was great. On the future for the Irish Open, so genuinely, I was kind of, you know, sitting there, I know I was down with Nathan as well and lots of other people, you're kind of looking around saying, you know, this thing has to come back to Lahinch very, very soon. Are you definitely done from hosting now? Are you one and done?
Yep, one and done, certainly for 5 years anyway.
Okay.
We're on this 5-year rotation where me, Padraig, Darren, Graham and Rory are on a 5-year rotation, and I was the first of that five. What's going to happen after that, I don't know, Joe,
right.
But that's in place.
And does the host effectively, and I appreciate you have to get sign off from different people and sponsors, but does the host effectively decide on the course?
No, he's got an input, and his powers of persuasion, like mine, had to come into play. With the hierarchy of the European Tour, and also Dubai Duty Free, they're the big stakeholders you got to convince. And I had a big chat with Keith Pelly, particularly over in Augusta, not this year, last year, about backing me to come to Lahinch.
And
that's what, if you have a strong view, you've got to tell them why. And I made it very clear. And, you know, thanks to him, and also thanks to Colin McLaughlin, who I talked to as well. We got them over the line. They have a say, but they don't have the veto on it. There's a number of factors go into it.
Right, okay. Harrington has been mooted for next year. He's obviously got the Ryder Cup, and you know more than most that that's a big commitment. So I don't know what he's going to do. I think he was a bit reticent about it yesterday and maybe saying it might not be the best year, which leaves, I presume, Rory's not going to do it again if you're on a Rota, McDowell or Clark. What direction would you like to see the tournament going? Because at the moment, you know, it looked like there was a pattern there of north and south and north and south, and that's, we've kind of gone away from that a touch now. It's hard to kind of pinpoint where it's going to go. I presume sponsors like the thought of Dublin, but we've seen the success of getting outside of Dublin and different parts of the country. In an ideal world, over the next 2, 3, 4 years, what pattern would you like the Irish Open to fall into in terms of venue?
I think a mixture of everything, Jack, to be honest. I mean, as I say, we got to showcase our country. That's number one more than anything. And particularly our golf courses, and use the golf courses and golf, which we're very famous for around the world, as a conduit to bring money into the Irish economy. That's the nuts and bolts of what the Irish Open has and always been about. And that's why the government invests in it, and that's why Tourism Ireland invests in it. And it's investing to get money back. So I wouldn't exclude anything. All of those things that you put on the table, I wouldn't exclude any of them things. And it's hard to really have a rota to say it's definitely going to be this or it's definitely going to be that, because things happen. Mm. Like next year, we're pressed with the... We're pressed with the Olympics coming into the schedule. We're pressed with the Ryder Cup coming into the schedule. We're pressed with the FedEx again finishing in August next year. So we've got, you know, lots of moving parts going in. We've got the Open Championship in Northern Ireland in a couple of weeks' time, and it's unlikely that, you know, Northern Ireland Tourist Board as well as the Northern Ireland government can, you know, afford to put more money in again in a big way. So we got to be, you know, cognizant of that when we make our decision. So everything is on the table. And the other thing to not rule out is inland courses. You know, let's not forget those. You know, we got some great inland courses now. Adair is on the schedule. And remember, JP's Pro-Am is on in Adair next year. Scheduled for the Monday and Tuesday of the Scottish. And we've got Caicló, we've got Mount Juliet. You know, we've got Loch Earn, you know, we've got lots of those as well that we shouldn't rule out. And also not rule out going back to Dublin at some stage.
Mm. Personal preference, everybody's going to have different ones. The K Club's a fine course and a fine place. I grew up, you know, relatively near to it. It's better in a town. It's better away from those inland, you know, the carton houses are great, the K Clubs are great. Frankly, like, there's less atmosphere. It's less Irish. You know, it's a bit more...
Yeah.
The European machine just plants down on these places, and it's a bit similar to any other tournament. Lahinch was different. It stood out. Like, should we not be going to the towns?
Yeah, well, that was my view. That was certainly my view because... You know, I speak of this as a dub myself. You know, we're spoilt in Dublin, Joe. We're all spoilt with the big, massive sporting occasions there. Whether it's a concert, whether it's a GA match, whether it's a rugby match, whether it's a soccer match, all the big matches are held there. And we get spoilt as dub because you have your pick and choose. So when you go down to a small town like we did last week in the southwest of Ireland, I mean, this is huge. The circus is coming to town. You know, and if we were to go to Ross's Point, it would be the same kind of thing. And I think that's what we've got to prove. And, you know, a lot of debate as well, too, about the field and, oh, he's playing, he's not playing. The atmosphere makes it more than one or two players coming or not going. Yes, you always want the best field you can possible, but the Irish Open should always be bigger than any one player.
Yeah.
It should be, you know what, this is an amazing event. We're hopefully set out crowds, great crack around it. We're going to create a festival. This is what the Irish Open is always going to be about. And you know what? If you don't want to come, fine. If you want to come, that's great. You're welcome. And I think when you make a brilliant event with huge crowds and really embraced by the public, the players will come more, you know? Instead, and that's why, you know, appearance money is not the answer.
Yeah.
You know, you've got to engage them with the heart. You engage the players with the heart, like John Rahm. He comes for the right reasons. He comes because his heart is there and that's what he wants to. He loves it and he knows he's going to play well there. That's the kind of attitude that we need to create in the players' minds in order to get really strong fields and make this Irish Open, you know, one of the real elite events on the sporting calendar.
Yeah, because there's a parallel experience with these tournaments. There's the TV experience and you definitely miss the big players when you're watching on TV, the Rorys of the world. But frankly, when you're at an event, you might see Rory for 3 minutes. Like, your experience of the event is not dictated by one or two big names. It's about the overall package. And just one last point, because I know obviously you're busy and you got to run. There's talk of the WGC being moved to before the 2 weeks before the Open next year because the Olympics are on, so it's all a bit compressed. So where the Irish Open might end up is, it seems, up for grabs. I saw Harrington saying let's keep it as close to the JP McManus Pro-Am as possible in July. Others have sort of said, well, maybe around Wentworth later on in the year. Any strong preference there?
Yeah, I don't have a strong preference, Joe, but I mean, we had a board meeting last week and, you know, this was debated. All I can say is that relations between Jay Monahan, the head of the PGA Tour, and Keith Pelly, the European Tour, have never been better. They both get on very well. It's not a case of, you know, one elbow and the other one out. I think both tours are under pressure with dates next year. When you put two extra weeks in, like you do, and like I say, in the Olympics and the Ryder Cup, it does put more pressure on. So they are meeting up in Portrush, and I know this is high on their agenda in a few weeks' time, to get some kind of a resolution to this. The PGA Tour schedule is rumoured. It's not definitely going to be. That date is definitely not going to be. It's rumoured to be. You know, nothing is set in stone at this moment in time. So those conversations are ongoing, Joe, and to be quite frank and honest, There is no answer at the moment. They don't know. Keith Petty doesn't know yet. You know, we don't know. We're only guessing what could happen. We don't know yet. But I think once the Open Championship is done and they have their big meetings, I think there will be a little bit of clarity and hopefully a consensus as to what is going to be the date where both tours are, you know, as agreeable as possible.
Okay. That's all good. Well, look, a busy few weeks ahead. Hey, congrats again. It was brilliant. I mean, it looked great on TV. It was certainly great there. I'm sure you're delighted and a bit tired and you've a busy week ahead by the sounds of things. So well done. Good job.
It's a pleasure, Joe. Well, thank you and everybody for coming down and supporting it. And, you know, your voices are very important. If you're having good fun, everybody else is going to buy into what you're saying about it. So thank you for that. And, you know, it really was something special. I really enjoyed it. And we move on to something else now. Thank you.